I'm up on the tight wire.
I'm sitting here in Studio B, across from my good friend Daniel Chacon.
And I'm sitting across from my good friend Benjamin Alida Sainz.
And he's also sitting in Studio B.
Yes, that's
and
true.
And welcome to another edition of Words on a Wire.
And, you know, I'm very excited, not only by the wonderful guest we have today, Lucha Corpi, who is a legend in Chicana literature and who just came out with a new book called Confessions of a Book Burner, and their personal essays and stories. I'm not only excited about that, but I'm also excited that today marks the fourth year that we've been on the air. Well, year four. We're beginning year four.
We're beginning year four.
Is that amazing? Can you believe we've been sitting across from each other in Studio B for 4 years?
And we're still talking to
each other. We still like each other. Well, at least you still like me.
Oh, so Daniel.
Yes.
Tell me, what are your hopes for the year?
My hopes for the year is to keep on doing great shows, hanging out with you. I'm writing like a crazy person. And I just finished a book. Well, I'm working on a book of poems right now. And I'm getting some of the poems published, and that's kind of exciting.
That is exciting. Welcome to the poetry world,
Daniel. Oh, thank you. It's good to be here. It's good to be here. You know, for some reason, not that I would ever compare myself to a prophet, but in the poetry of the language in the Old Testament, where Saul is walking among the prophets, and somebody says, is Saul also among the prophets? Of course, Saul is ultimately doomed and has a horrible ending, but I love the poetry of that. Is Saul also among the prophets? And I kind of like to think of myself as, is Chacon also among the poets? Because you guys are prophets, man, and I'm glad to be a part of it.
Well, I also have just rewritten my latest book of poems, and it's finally done.
What's it called?
It's called He, You, I.
11.
And I also recently, just 2.5 weeks ago, finished my new young adult novel entitled
The Inexplicable Logic of My Heart.
You're right. That's yes. Exactly the title.
I love Ben's titles.
And that's done, and I'm really excited about that.
So, and if I could say, you know, your past novels, YA novels, have done so well and won so many prizes, and taking the YA world, you know, and being translated into so many languages. You just told me a little while ago.
We just sold the rights for our 10th foreign rights deal. This time it's going to be published in Korean.
Yeah. And so I imagine this novel is going to be awesome. I can't wait. Congratulations. I'm thinking about writing a memoir. And you know what I think I'm going to call it?
What?
I think I'm going to call it All Good Things in My Life Begin and End with Benjamin Alida Sainz.
Love the title. It's got a ring to it.
No, seriously, because not only are you a great friend, but you also have been one of my biggest supporters as a writer. And today I just moved into my new office. Our department has new offices, and my office is the most beautiful office in the world. It faces Juarez, downtown El Paso. It's the best view in all of the university, and the only reason why I have that office is because you gave it up, because you could have had that office. So thank you.
You're welcome.
And I was very pleased to have learned that I won the Penn Oakland Award for my book, Hotel Juarez.
The Josephine Miles Award.
Yes, and I know that would not have been possible without you, Ben. So I just thank you so much for believing in me.
Congratulations.
And you know what? When it rains on Ben Sainz, rain, of course, being a metaphor for good things, Chacon is always nearby getting wet.
So stay tuned to our interview with our first guest this season, Lucha Corpi.
And on Poetic License today, we have the fantastic
Michael Jaime Becerra.
Wonderful novelist, and we had him here for a reading. He's just a great guy, and so I'm looking forward to this. It's from his new memoir.
So I'm sure his reflections will be absolutely stellar.
So stick around for another 4 years with me and Ben on KTEP 88.5. We'll be right back.
Lucha Corpi is a poet, novelist, and children's book author. She has written 4 mystery novels featuring the character Gloria Damasco. She writes her poetry in Spanish and her fiction in English. Her latest book
is Confessions of a Book Burner, Personal Essays and Stories. It's her very first autobiography, and we're going to talk a little bit about that today. And I just have to say, this woman is a legend in Chicana literature. And
She's been around for a long time.
Yeah, and I'm very happy to have her on the show. And it's quite an honor to talk to her.
Lucha, welcome to Words on a Wire. Mm-hmm. Tell me when you began writing and why.
Well, you know, contrary to everyone's case, who started, I remember Ana Castillo telling me, I started writing when I could hardly hold the pencil. And I thought, oh my goodness, I am really late, because I was 24 years old when I started. Before that, I wasn't much into music and other things, you know, but I never felt quite the urge to write. And I had no idea that that was my destiny. But I was going through, I was living in Berkeley already, and I was going through a divorce. And I had very few friends. I had been living in Berkeley for about 5 years and got married very young, 19, in Mexico, and then came with my husband to Berkeley. So it was kind of like I had no friends. I was alone. I had a child. I just started writing things that came to my mind just to make sense of what was going on. But little by little, there seemed to be something to what I was writing. And then one night I wrote a long poem in four sections, the poems of Marina, which is about La Malinche. And I realized that there was something more that I hadn't expected. It made me feel like I was in a place all my own, when there was no need for anything else, where everything made sense. And it made me feel in a way that I had never felt before. And I realized that this is what I had been looking for all my life. And in a way, you know, I have an essay here in this book that talks about destiny. In a way, I felt that I had found what I was born to do and born to be in the world. And that was Lucha, the poet.
Wow. Your new book is called Confessions of a Book Burner, Personal Essays and Stories. And this is your very first autobiographical book, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And golly, I got myself in a swamp.
How so? How did you get it? It
was so difficult. It's been one of the most difficult things I've had to write. Basically because I think once you say memoir and autobiography, you begin to think of the truth. What is the truth in all this? How just the fact that you remember something already where imagination and being a writer doesn't help. With that is that, you know, imagination gets in, and then if you're a storyteller, you're going to want to make it a story.
Yeah, we're going to...
So how much of it is true, you know?
That's interesting that you would do that, because now the trajectory of your career so far, poetry, and then you wrote these mystery novels featuring Gloria Damasco. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering, I was looking at it the other day in my desk. I was rearranging my new office, and I found my copy of Eulogy for a Brown Angel, which you autographed for me, because I actually met you right around the time that you had that book published in 1992. I believe it was published by Arte Público Press. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. But you're wrong. We met long before then.
Yes, and I have the picture to prove it.
No,
we met actually in San Jose at a reading. Well, we met at Gary Soto's house as well. But I think it was the second time we saw each other, because you were very present in my mind when I made a list of the people that the writers that I would invite to that that event, that whatever it was at Gary's. But I had met you when I asked you. I had read your first book of poetry.
Oh,
when
yeah.
was that?
That was published in 1991.
Okay.
Calendar of Dust.
Calendar of Dust, yes.
Yes. And I invited you to read with Francisco Alarcón, and I think Juan Felipe was also there, and
oh,
other
yes.
people in San Jose. at a new venue.
Yes, and it was with Jose Antonio Burciaga as well, I believe.
Yes. So there were about five of you, and I believe I had invited also, you know, kind of, I figure, you know, invite some of the critics and the professors, you know, who were doing literary criticism of Chicano literature. And so I invited a professor too, who was very, very interesting because he said, "What am I doing here?" And I said, "Well, you're a writer too, of essays, whatever, for literary criticism." And so anyway, so it was. We had a great time.
Yes,
I didn't read that night because I was at the table telling you.
Excuse me, very sweet.
I'm looking at a photo right now that Ben put on Facebook. And it's a fantastic photo. In fact, you know, you guys should make a poster out of this. But it has a bunch of Chicano writers hanging out. I'm not sure where you're at. Maybe you're at Gary Soto's place. I'm not sure. But there's in the photo is Gary Soto. There's you. There's Benjamin. There's Lorna Di Cervantes. There's Jose Antonio Burciaga. Bernice Armoya.
Bernice Mora Zamora, and Alfredo Arteaga.
Francisco X. Alarcón. It's a fantastic picture. Do you remember the story behind this picture, either one of you?
Well, Gary and I were very good friends at the time. We also found out that our birthdays were one day apart. Of course, I was much older than him. And he wanted to get together. Gary, you know, had a difficult personality.
Yeah, I've heard.
You know, he and I got along at the time.
Right.
But he wanted to get together a group of the writers. He knew that if he invited them, they probably would not come. So he said, "Would you mind inviting?" And I knew all of them. He said, "Would you mind asking them to come for, you know, we'll have something to eat." You know, Carolyn, his wife, who's a wonderful person and artist, to prepare something for all of us. I made the calls. They all came kind of intrigued.
Mm-hmm.
And so we got together. Basically, what Gary wanted was something very interesting. You always look back and you will see how things, you know, are going to go and how much of it we owe to Gary to have put the idea in our minds, you know, that we could write for children.
Mm.
Because at the time he wanted to make it a career, part of his writing, you know, important part of his writing, to write children's books, and he had already written. But I think underneath all that, there was also something he wanted to do for his agent, which was to all of us to sign up with her to write children's books.
Yeah.
He felt alone. He felt, you know, that there wasn't enough of this literature for children yet.
And he was right. He was absolutely right.
He was right, except for Children's Book Press in San Francisco and a few others here and there who published, you know, a book a year, because children's books are very expensive to produce, you know, so there weren't that many. Children's Book Press actually was the only one I knew in San Francisco that was publishing multicultural children's books. So at any rate, he wanted us all to sign with his agent. I think that was the real purpose of our getting together, you know, and getting kind of apoyo, you know, support from all the writers that he had in one way or another treated not very well.
Well, it's a fantastic photo, and if our listeners go to the Words on a Wire page on ktep.org, you can take a look at it, and there's 13 of you, and so this could very well be the Last Supper of Chicano writers. Who's the Jesus, though? That's the question.
Yeah, actually, everybody was very intrigued by Gary inviting us. It was actually, in many ways, I tell you, he didn't know it, and it wasn't his purpose, maybe. But he did start something.
Well, it's really interesting because I wound a very important part of my career is writing bilingual children's books and young adult novels.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the only thing I do, but I'm a very successful children's book writer. I have been, which is really interesting. And I never imagined that I would be, because at the time I was very much a poet and a short story writer, period.
And it's interesting. I mean, somebody puts the idea in your head and you begin, it stays there because, you know, it's intriguing, whatever. We are writers, so we are open to new things. And it's interesting that he, in a way, started that whole movement.
You know,
because there was hardly anything at the time.
Yeah. We're talking to Lucha Corpi, whose new book just came out, Confessions of a Book Burner, and it is a autobiographical essays and stories. Lucha, you also write poetry, and an interesting fact about your writing is you write your poetry in Spanish and you write your prose in English. Why is that?
I don't know. I think because, well, first of all, I think the language of poetry is the one you learn at home. It's your home language. For people, sometimes both languages are home languages. And so they write bilingual poetry or they write in both languages. For me, it will always be Spanish because until 19 years of age, I had not even heard English that much. So I think poetry comes from a very different place than fiction. You know that. I mean, any writer knows that. Because poetry digs into places where the fiction writer, for example, does not go very often for personal reasons, because you are writing about others. And that's what I like about fiction, is that you're able to not be there present as a poet, for example, is. And even though you transcend and you the poetry comes from a place deep inside you, from incongruent elements that you find in your subconscious, your conscious, everywhere, you know. And it also, poetry is very special. I mean, it takes from music, it takes elements from philosophy, from almost every kind of expression. And like music, I always believe that like music, poetry is one of our oldest ancestors in terms of expression, human expression. That maybe there was music first, and then poetry, although once I told Gary this, Gary Soto, and he said, I don't think so. But I think music, the sound, just the sound of the breeze going through the trees, a drop of rain, you know, kind of drumming. I don't know, the whole nature is full of sound, and so we react to that sound, I think, and I think music, in a way, comes from that need to recreate what we hear. The radio is on, and a baby is there, and he will, or she will, start paying attention to that music and moving to it. You know, so I think music is, despite what Gary says, and then comes the word, you know, which is the sound that comes from an intelligence putting together what he or she hears or sees or senses, you know. I think it comes from a very different place. I just don't see them because, in a way, as a writer, what you do is to answer the questions. What? Who? Where? When? Which? How? Why? You know, and then you have the story. And storytelling is very different. It requires a different part of your mind to work on it. Perhaps a more logical part of your mind. I don't know exactly where it comes from, but it is a very different process. Okay. And that's the reason why we always say poets and writers, because there is a difference between the two kinds of writing. But for me, because I was so tangled, you know, while going through my divorce and not knowing what was going to happen to me and my child, my son, there was a need to dig in there and bring out all of that was going on. But I did it in the language that was the strongest in me. And that was where I learned to feel, and that was Spanish. For the novels, I mean, I'm just stubborn, you know? I mean, I've been told you'll never be a great writer. I've been told you need to learn so much more. English is not your language. Go back to Spanish, write stories in Spanish, you know? I've heard it all kinds of things. But I'm very stubborn, and I feel that it's not that you're going to write the greatest story or novel ever written. You know, it is the fact that you do the writing. And that's what is important to me always. Do the writing, apprentice what you don't know, and go on. And every time you will find new challenges and you will learn some more, and that will keep you interested, that will keep you learning, and you will get better. I don't intend to write the best novel ever, but I will be as good as I can be.
Well, yeah, and that's like we have to strive for our own inner excellence all the time. Lucha, we're all just about out of time, but generally speaking, when we have poets and writers on the show, particularly poets, we ask them to read a poem because we always have a poem of the week. Do you have a poem handy that you'd like to read for the poem of the week?
Okay, here's one. It's called Canción de Invierno, Winter Song. Would you like me to read also the translation by Catherine Rodriguez Nieto?
Sure, that would be great.
Okay, it's not very long. And it's dedicated to Magdalena Mora, who died in 1981. We were very good friends, although there was a difference in age in us. And she was a woman who was so dedicated to, and so, incredible. We met at Berkeley when we were both students there. She died of a brain tumor at a very early age. So this is dedicated to Magdalena Mora, 1952 to 1981. En un abrir y cerrar de ojos, lleno de magia, relojes y sueños viejos, llega el invierno. El viento rumora melancólico como el todo en calma del sereno que velaba la casa de mis padres. Ahí vuelvo cada invierno para no olvidar quién soy ni de dónde vengo. Cantando baja la lluvia a su destino de mineral y semilla, entre el hueco del ala que se extiende y el entrecerrar de la mirada que descansa, aprendemos a amar en instantes y entregas, y entre la pregunta íntima de la noche y la respuesta dulce y oscura de la madrugada, gestamos dolorosamente una nueva vida. Nada hay fijo ni perenne, ni la lluvia, ni la semilla, ni tú, ni yo, ni nuestro dolor en este mundo que sangra, porque vamos siempre tirando senda, abriendo brecha por caminos desconocidos, venciendo la furia del olvido, verso a verso. Winter Song. In the opening and shutting of an eye, full of magic, clocks, and old dreams, winter comes. The wind murmurs melancholy as the old swell of the night watchman who looked after my parents' house. I go back every winter lest I forget who I am or where I come from. The rain comes down singing toward its destiny of mineral and seed, between the hollow of an opening wing and the lowering of eyelids in repose. We learn to love in instants and surrenders, and between the intimate question posed by night and the dark, sweet reply given by dawn, we engender in pain a new life. Nothing is fixed or perpetual, not rain or seed or you or I or our grief in this world that is fleeting, because we're forever cut in paths, opening our way along unfamiliar roads, conquering the fury of oblivion, verse by verse.
That was lovely.
This is a poem, actually, that opens one of the essay in Confessions of a Book Burner, the essay about destiny.
Thank you so much for being on Words on the Wire.
It's my pleasure. Thanks, Daniel. Gracias, Ben.
I'm very pleased that today on Poetic License we have the novelist Michael Jaime Becerra, author of two books of fiction, Every Night is Ladies' Night and This Time Tomorrow. Welcome to Poetic License,
Michael. Thank you for having me. I'm going to be reading an excerpt out of an essay I wrote recently for the East of East Project, which was put together by the South Almani Arts Posse. This is available online, so if you just Google East of East, it'll pop up. The piece is called 1181 Durfee Avenue, 1983 to 1986, and it's about Golfland, which is the video game arcade I hung out at as a kid. The sound of four quarters falling out of a change machine is a delight, and the jackpot sound of 20 falling after you've inserted a $5 bill is rapturous. If Golfland's change machines produced tiny snacks instead of quarters, you'd be salivating. Even though you've gotten there early, other kids are already crowded around the games you've waited all week to play. In the fourth grade, there is no statement more badass than the placing of a quarter at the edge of a video game screen. The tap of the coin against the glass declares that you're playing next. It also implies that you will play the game better than whoever is at the joystick, and your looming presence over their shoulder will insist that they get it over with already. You are not badass, so you walk around until your opportunities come. When they do, you love the digitized versions of Bach and Henry Mancini used as theme music, the robotic voice asking that you prepare to qualify, the different chimes and chirps that signal incremental accomplishments, a bracing thud as your spacecraft is equipped with double cannons, a high whine when you shift into high gear, the hyperspace trill bringing you one warp closer to Earth. You love the idea of your lasers winging Darth Vader's TIE fighter and sending him spinning into space as you advance on the Death Star. You love the challenge of destroying your enemies before they can destroy you. Of all the games, Punch-Out is the one you love most. It lets you be a boxer, your green character looking something like a graph paper diagram of Bruce Banner half-transformed into the Hulk. After you drop in a quarter, the game asks you to enter your initials to declare an identity before your first match. Your fourth-grade sensibility finds the opponent characters intriguing. Glass Joe is goofy, and Piston Hurricane seems tough, and Bald Bull, who reminds you of Marvin Hagler, repeatedly reveals your lack of hand-eye coordination with his devastating uppercut. You infrequently make it to a fourth fight. Each time you manage one, Kid Quick lives up to his name and dispatches you with a relentless flurry of punches that you are helpless to counter. When you go down, his pixelated taunting prompts another quarter into the machine. It will take you a while to realize the secret of your opponent's eyes flashing yellow right before they try to punch you. When you are knocked down, the game will encourage you to get up, and in an effort to regain strength, you will tap the left and right buttons as fast as you can. You've seen other kids do it, but you don't know if it actually works. There will be the occasional game when it all comes easy, when you lock in on the pattern of each opponent and their special move doesn't phase you. You will avoid their jabs and hooks and body blows and strike back with purpose, your strength gaining. When it peaks, the right hook punch enabled, the game will tell you to put your opponent away, and you will.
That was Michael Jaime Becerra. Thank you for joining us on Words on the Wire.
Thank you.
That wraps up another great show here on Words on a Wire.
We'd like to thank Lucha Corpi for not only reading her poem, but for giving us a little insight into her life and the Chicano writing community in general.
And we'd like to thank Michael Jaime Becerra for his wonderful insights in today's Poetic License.
And we'd like to thank our producer, Norma Martinez, for keeping this show going for 4 years. Thank you, Norm.
And thank you, our loyal fans, for listening to us again. Another Sunday spent with us. Yay. Good for you and good for us.
I got an email from somebody from Australia who said he listens to all the shows, every single one of them. So we are reaching out there a little bit. I'm Daniel Chacon.
And I'm Benjamin Alire Science.
And don't forget,
the next book you read
could save your life. I'm up on a tight wire. One side's ice and one is fire. It's a circus game with you.